Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast. We are busy for the last 8 years deconstructing Buffett's investing strategies and tactics. And we've been talking about sort of a matrix of the weather matrix that we need to be aware of as we start to look at owning something. But I thought before we dive back into that.
Oh, okay.
I thought I would tell you a little story today. I think just for fun. I think you'll enjoy this. And I think you already know this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Let me just make a note of what we were about to talk about and then
forget. Yeah, just make a small note.
Okay. Sure.
Right?
Ready. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so this is here's what I want you to understand is how critical I'm just going to tell you the story.
Okay.
Let's say we're going to go play golf. Let's say you're going to go play golf with somebody. And you say, look, just to make this a little more fun, let's bet on who wins each hole. Okay?
Sure.
Who bet? Okay. And let's just bet on the first hole for a penny.
Okay.
All right? All right. And then let's, just so that you can kind of like if you lose when you're betting on red on a roulette table, you can double your bet and maybe you'd win the next one and you break even. So the second hole, let's make it 2 cents.
Okay.
Okay. And the third hole, let's make it 4 cents. So there's always a chance you can double and get your money back. Mm-hmm. All right. And let's just do that for the 18 holes.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Now, the real question here is what is the value of the penny? Right? Is it really just a penny? Or is it a lot more? And as we get into this, I think you'll see what I mean. So if you follow the logic here, by the time we get to the 10th hole, we're not betting that hole for a penny or for 2 pennies. We're betting it for $10.
How did we
get
to
$10? That is by doubling a penny. Well, we went from 1 penny to 2 pennies. That's one double.
Oh, it's doubles. I thought it was just an extra penny every hole.
No, it's extra. What was one extra penny, then 2 extra pennies.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
2 to 4.
I thought it was like 1 plus
4 to
2.
8.
1 plus 1.
8 to 16.
Okay.
16 to 32, 32 to 64. By the time we get to the 10th hole, we're at $10. By the time we get to the 18th hole, we're playing that hole for $2,600.
Damn.
And if we're tied for the next 2 holes, we're playing that 20th hole for $10,000 for the hole.
All right. Go doubling.
That's pretty powerful, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that something? Okay.
Is that really true? I'm
yeah,
not going to check you.
True.
I'm just going to assume that it's correct.
Yeah, it's totally true. It's a stunning, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a story that I've told you before, and I just want to tell you it again in the context of this little game. And that is, it was told by an insurance, well, I don't know who it was told by, but it comes down to me that it was told by a guy in the elevator with Warren Buffett in Omaha going up to Buffett's office, who works in the insurance industry. And he said that Buffett came into the elevator and they started riding up and they saw that Buffett was looking at the floor. So this guy looks at the floor and there's a penny on the floor. And he was saying, I'm just wondering if Warren Buffett, a multi-billionaire, is going to really seriously reach down and pick up a penny. And so we just stood there. And when we got to Buffett's floor, the doors opened, he stepped outside and then he turned around and smiled at us and then reached down and grabbed the penny before the door closed. And before it closed, he said, start of the next billion. And then walked away. Start of the next billion. So the point of all this, Danielle, is that the people who generate enormous amounts of wealth, by and large, understand the power of compounding in a way that other people don't understand it. And I wanted to bring this up in this context of the Matrix, because what it means to compound in my world and in your world of investing is, first, a good long-term investment. And then second, the patience with the sort of ups and downs, the patience to let this compounding thing happen.
Yes.
And it's extraordinary how people who don't understand generational wealth do pretty much by gut, by just going with the emotions, the exact opposite of what you ought to do. And by that, I mean, if an investment is going up, people who don't understand generational wealth start to become fearful that the profits will go away. And they'll sell. They'll sell this wonderful investment after it maybe doubles. Now, ask me how I know. Because I've
don't
done
have
that
to.
Many, many times.
Yeah.
It's one of the most frustrating things for me to do. And if you've been on this podcast with me for 8 years, you know I've done it repeatedly. And it's very, very frustrating. And it's something that Buffett is way better than me at. Just sitting there and letting it compound. Whereas somebody who's a bad investor, first, they're going to get out too soon of a good investment. And on a bad investment, they won't quit. They're sure that it's all going to turn around and they won't lose any money. Whereas a really good investor will see that the story has changed, the analysis is different, and they're going to exit. So Warren Buffett is not only one of the best people at holding investments for a really long time, he's also one of the best people at getting the hell out when it isn't
he really is.
What he thought it was. Absolutely.
I mean, I think what you're saying is totally right. I'm not sure it's people that don't understand generational wealth. I think it's people don't understand their investment. And so when
Fair enough.
Something happens, the price goes up or goes down, whatever, something happens and you don't know why, that's terrifying for anybody. That's terrifying for the best investor in the world. If he doesn't know why that happened, he shouldn't be owning that either. So,
well, I think you're really at the cause of those kinds of mistakes. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
100% at the cause. I'm just thinking of two famous families that were out there, the Vanderbilt family and the Rockefeller family, both about the same time, extremely, extremely wealthy. And in the Vanderbilt family, what happened when Vanderbilt died is he gave his heirs the money. They got the money.
Okay.
And within 40 years, his heir 40 years later was bankrupt.
Hmm.
And his mansion was being torn down. It was just a wreck. Hmm. Whereas Rockefeller didn't give his family the money. He set up a trust and the family could draw down on the trust on a limited amount.
Hmm.
And here we are 100 years later, and they're still stinking rich because they have allowed that money. The trust put it away in investments that compound over long periods of time.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah.
Right? As yes. opposed to giving people the cash and allowing them to spend it.
Yeah, exactly.
So essentially, what I wanted to add here is that an investment, and we've had this talk before, but an investment, in my view, is an asset that produces cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't produce cash flow, it's not an investment. It's either a speculation or you're just buying stuff, right? So, for example, some examples of things that would be interesting investments that produce their assets to produce cash flow would be that house we were talking about last week across the street that produces rent income. That we call this cash flow owner earnings. Let's stay with that term.
But let me just ask, because the sort of putting it this way is the first time I've heard of it. So you're saying you think an investment is only something that produces cash flow while you own it, not something that you would essentially buy and hold, produces no cash flow while you hold it, and then you sell it, let's say, at a huge profit. That would not be an investment under this definition?
Well, when I say that the investment, it's not an investment unless it's an asset that produces cash flow,
mm-hmm.
I don't mean that you get the cash flow. I just mean that it produces it. So, for example, for years, Apple Computer never produced a dividend. You didn't get any money.
Sure, yeah.
But they reinvested their cash flow.
Yeah, they had income.
The value of the business improved.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm really happy. That's a sort of a second layer of understanding about investments that, well,
the reason I'm asking this is that you've often brought up an example of an investment as somebody who goes and buys fur coats at garage sales and then resells them. And you've never talked about that as a speculation, but a fur coat doesn't produce cash flow.
Fair enough. Ah, damn, you're so good at...
No, I'm just trying to figure this out.
Yeah, but you're making a very good point. So I would say that somebody who is buying a mink coat, say, and then flipping it, they're doing so. That's an investment for them. They're very knowledgeable. They're taking something and turning it into cash. So
because I actually think you're right.
I have to expand my.
I think you're right. I think that's not an investment. I think that is a speculation. Because if the day after that person buys the mink coat, finally everybody else comes around and realizes that animals are being tortured for those things and they stop buying them on the secondhand market, the bottom drops out. You got a whole bunch of fur coats in your closet that produce nothing.
Thank you. I'm withdrawing my...
I think you're right.
My rejection of my own idea. I think I'm right too. And the reason I think
say
I'm
that
right
sometime.
Also
I'm
is
withdrawing
exactly
my rejection of my own idea.
I am.
I really enjoy that.
Because you're right, 100% right, that it's a speculation because if you hold it, if you're stuck with it...
Right, if you're stuck with it.
It does you no good.
Yeah.
Does you no good.
I mean, I guess you can wear
that's
them.
Such a brilliant insight, Danielle. Well done. So, for
let
example...
Let me write that down, my brilliant insight. If you're stuck with it.
Yeah, so for example, if somebody sold you gold... For let's say $1,000.
Oh, that's a good example.
For an ounce. Somebody sold you gold for $1,000. That would look pretty much like an investment, right? Because you can flip it. It's liquid. You can flip it almost immediately for $2,000. But you're right. Something could happen in the interim that would cause this thing to just sit there for you. Maybe it drops to by 50% overnight for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And now you just own it and it does nothing. It does nothing.
I mean, I will say I think gold's kind of in its own category because it's fungible for money, basically.
If we can make the case that Warren Buffett makes, gold is definitely in the category of a non-investment asset.
Yeah. He says gold does not count as a... I mean, he has explicitly said it produces nothing. Yeah, you're right.
And so one of the tests that Warren uses is to ask, if the market for this shut down for the next 10 years, would I be completely comfortable owning it?
And so that is how he says it. That's much better.
Coat, you go buy that mink coat and all of a sudden you can't sell it for 10 years. You have no idea where the market's going to open for mink coats in 10 years. None.
Right.
Might not be a market in 10 years. Same thing for gold. You bought it for $1,000. Great. Well, now it's $500. So it's a big, big difference to understand an asset, investment asset, being something that produces cash flow, or in our terms, again, owner earnings. Mm-hmm. So some of the things that do that we've owned over time since you've been a little kid with me, it would be a farm. It produces cash flow from farming operations. We had oranges and peaches and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And it would be an oil well. That produces oil. Your great aunt had a lease on an oil well. The oil company. Yeah, she made $20, $30 a year on that sucker.
Oh, sweet.
Awesome. Oh my gosh. Not a big oil well person, but it's still, you know, whatever she paid for it, it was probably worth it.
I didn't know we were an oil family.
Oil family. And so, you know, you can look at these things. And of course, that house across the street produces owner earnings. And of course, Apple Computer produces owner earnings. And owner earnings isn't necessarily money we put in our pocket. We would actually much prefer not to put it in our pocket if whoever's creating the owner earnings would please just get great returns on our money if they'll hold on
compounding
to it.
Compounding, to come back to the beginning.
Compounding it. That's where we were going. And that's what makes... these businesses so much different than everything else. Hmm. You know, the money you get off a house isn't going to be compounded by the house manager. You're just going to have to go spend it, or you're going to have to go buy some other investment in order to compound the money the owner earns. But real compounding comes from the business itself compounding the owner earnings for you. And that is what we're really looking for. So I just wanted to put that out there, that the power of compounding is enormous to produce generational wealth. And that's what we'd all like to have. It requires a mindset that you're really going to own things that you're going to own forever, and the patience to let them alone and let them grow. You get some great company, let it alone, let it go. And Charlie reminded me many times, it's like, if you can't stomach to see the company that you own go down in the market, you have the price go down by 50%, you know, this is the wrong game. You've mm-hmm. got to be able to handle that mm-hmm. comfortably by having total comfort that you know what you own. Back to your original point, you know what you own. And that in our matrix is the high understanding part of the matrix. Then we went to the low understanding, which is, okay, now you're going to study this stuff because you think it might be on sale, and bring yourself up to a high understanding. This a high understanding is just massively critical because of the power of compounding not happening unless you can leave these things alone.
Yes.
You sell them.
Yes.
That's the end of it.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go over to the other side of the matrix then. Which
okay,
is
wait, can we talk about
high,
the... Go ahead. All right, go ahead.
All right. You had a question.
Well, it's not a question. It, like, from what we said, you were saying at the end of the last episode, that the way you were describing the way that you decided to stop researching the weather around Netflix. And the way that
That left with you a question, did it?
Not a question. An insight.
An insight.
I don't want to have to reject my own rejection of my own insight. I take it back. The rejection of my
did.
Rejection of my own insight.
I was too quick to think I was wrong.
excuse me. So
see, you do that to me because you're so smart.
So what you said was, because what we're getting at is, where do you draw the line? Where do you, the proverbial you who is tired at 10 o'clock at night, where do you draw the line on, I know enough about the weather? The company itself, like, I got that on lock. How do I know if I know enough about the weather? And what you said was that with your analyst telling you about Netflix and the weather around Netflix, you didn't know where to draw the line because this was somebody else's deep dive and you were
right.
processing your thoughts and information about
inverting.
It. And the way you did it was inverting.
Yes.
The way you
found
where the line was
ooh,
you inverted.
Insight.
And I think that is brilliant because we can all do that. You don't need another person to do that. It's nice. It's helpful. But like, we don't need that. And it's already part of the study in the company, part of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
So we have experience with it. So I thought that was so
Let's
interesting.
Make sure everybody understands what we mean by inverting.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so inverting can be as simple as, I got a question about this. I mean, it's just asking questions about the company that can be sophisticated or not very or whatever. And one way to get at the beginning of inverting is to look at why you would want to buy this business and then turn it on its head.
Mm-hmm.
Just go say, for example, I really want to own Chipotle Mexican Grill because it has this fabulous brand about being natural, organic, gourmet food, super cheap. It's gourmet fast
medium,
food. That's
medium
like,
cheap, sort of. Not really
cheap.
All that cheap. Really it's worth the price.
So you got the point. It's got this great brand out there. And the inversion that was all over the internet after they had E. coli was look at the destruction of the brand. This is,
oh, yeah.
People got sick in the organic food place.
Yes.
Chipotle is toast, right?
Frozen so pre-made is so much safer.
Yeah. So that's a perfect example of the reason I want to buy it is because ABC, in this case, great organic natural food brand, super healthy. And oh, no, it's not. It's not super healthy. It's not, it has a broken brand moat.
And you're saying this was kind of
want to buy it.
The prevailing view at the time.
That was a prevailing view at the time, right? So basically take at least the top three reasons why you really want to own this business and turn them on its head. I want to own Apple Computer because Steve Jobs is such a brilliant guy. Oh yeah, well, Steve Jobs is sick and dying and Tim Cook's going to take it over and there's nothing brilliant about him.
Yeah.
He's just an organizational guy. He's a really good operations guy.
By the way, Steve Jobs. That was my inversion and I had no answer to that. And I completely missed the boat. I was super wrong.
I think Tim Cook surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, that stock dropped like a brick when it was clear that Steve was very sick.
Yeah.
And it was because everybody thought Tim Cook was just an operations guy.
Yep, including me. I didn't have an answer to that inversion.
Just an operations guy. I'm not taking anything away from Tim being one of the best operations people in the world. But it also turned out he was pretty damn good at pushing along the product line that Steve had helped create.
Yeah.
So... So anyway, that's what we mean by inversion. So you invert until you can't invert.
Or tell me if this is, maybe, I guess we haven't talked about this for a while. The way that I think about inversions is, here's a horrible scenario. What happens to this company? So like,
good.
In that situation,
any reason not to buy it is an inversion.
Yeah, because that's where I go with the weather question is like, there's a tsunami off the coast of Japan. What happens to this, you know, grocery company in Minnesota? Maybe nothing, but maybe something. Like, do I know the answer to that?
And it's taking the weather a little more literally.
I know,
than
but
I
that's
meant.
The stuff I think about. I think this is why
little,
you don't. You don't.
A little far
I think this
field,
is why you
maybe.
Thought this was not an interesting topic, and I was like, I need to know everything because you're
oh
like,
my gosh.
Why would anyone ever think of that? And
no, because here's the answer to that, honey, is that we really require the competitive advantage to be so durable that it can overcome these sorts of infinitely numbers of inversions related to some nasty event that can happen around the world. So typhoon happens in Japan and it affects the supply of something to a grocery store.
Yeah.
That's all Japanese food. And now they're in trouble. Okay, well, how big is their moat? A big moat company is going to get through that. And that eliminates so many issues.
Hmm.
The moat eliminates the issues. Because think of it as an attack. It's an attack on the castle.
Yes.
It's not going to last very long. It's a typhoon. It's not going to last a month.
Right? Well, maybe it lasts for 2 years, right? Wouldn't that be...
Well, supply chains could be disrupted for 2 years, sure.
Like one of your favorite examples is that t-shirt company or cotton company. And when the Arab Spring happened, the price of cotton went crazy. And
Gildan.
And their stock price dropped because everyone thought, like, they're not going to recover from this for a long time. So if you were an owner of Gildan before that happening, and you had never thought about, you know, I guess I'm sort of answering my own question, actually, in my head. I was going to say you never thought about, like, a war in the Middle East affecting the t-shirt company. But what would be an obvious thing to think about is the price of cotton. Goes up like crazy.
Yeah, price of cotton goes through the roof.
Obvious.
What happens because I've got these contracts?
So the cause of the cotton price rising, maybe I don't have to come up with every possible cause of that, but probably knowing about the price of cotton would be a good thing. And like how and taking a guess on how that would affect the company, right?
Yeah, but that shouldn't be something that hangs you up for very long because the moat of the company is relative to its competitors in the t-shirt business. So if there's a cotton problem, it's everybody's cotton problem.
Right. Oh yeah, and, that's a good point.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, I mean, it's a bit like, let's say you're looking at an oil company like Occidental Petroleum, who happens to have the lowest price, the lowest cost of producing a barrel of oil,
okay,
of any company in the country. So they have the ability to keep making money when everybody else is losing money, which is a moat. We call a price moat.
Yes.
Right?
That's
their
a really
costs
good
are
moat.
Lower. Really good moat. Saudi Arabia's had that moat forever. Mm-hmm. Super cheap oil to get out of the ground. But now it's not. Now it's much more expensive to get out of the ground over there. The Permian Basin, which Oxy's got a big position in, is super cheap. They're just going back into old wells and they're fracking them. Mm. And so their costs are much lower than they used to be. And so, you know, you look at that and just go, okay, well, if the price of oil goes down really a lot, then the price of Occidental Petroleum stock is going to go down with it. And you can look at any chart of any oil company and see that the prices of this stock is related to the price of oil. Okay. But is that going to be a forever problem, that oil prices are going to go down forever or not? And that's where you would answer the inversion to your comfort, right? You don't have to think of all the reasons why oil prices are going to go down. Just, are you comfortable that this condition will be resolved and this company will make money in the future?
Gotcha.
That's what you have to decide. That's harder with Occidental than it is with something like a Chipotle, right? So, yeah. So I think we better get over to the matrix here.
Okay.
On the other side, where we've talked about, on the right side of the matrix, where we have still a high understanding, but the value divided by the price is not high. It's low. So in this case, that house that we want to buy across the street, we have a very high understanding of it. Unfortunately, they want $400,000 for it, and we think it's worth $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got a value of $200,000 divided by $400,000, and that's a 0.5 ratio, which is low. And so we can't put this in the buy box, even though we have a really high understanding, but we want to buy it. So it goes into the box to the right of the buy box, which is called the watch box, or you got it down as a wish list, right? Wish list. Or in each case of these things, or you reject it, right? I mean, in other words, if you understand it really, really well, and you don't want to buy it, then it's a rejection. It's gone.
It's so gone it off of the list. Maybe I research it more list.
Yeah, it's done. You put it over on the, yeah, I don't want this list. It's, I understand it completely great, and I'm not going to buy it. I don't like it.
Oh, I thought you just weren't going to buy it because the price wasn't very good.
No, well, that's the watch list.
Yeah. Wait, what are you talking about?
In each one of these boxes, there is sort of parenthetically the obvious alternative, which is reject it.
Yes. I'm right? done with you.
I'm done
Get
with you.
Get off my matrix.
Exactly. So just because you have a high understanding and the thing is on sale, it's a high value price ratio, it doesn't mean you're going to buy it. It means you're going to buy it or reject it.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing here. The price is low. Okay. Very high understanding. Okay. I'm either going to put it on my watch list or I'm going to reject it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So if it goes on my watch list, what I'm really doing there is, again, there's a continuum of how high your understanding is. I can continue to learn more about that company, but it's probably a much lower priority than continuing to learn about companies that are ready to be bought.
Yeah. And on those, one thing you said before that I wrote down was really helpful, that when you get to a level of repetitiveness in the reading, that's when you can pretty much be like, all right, I'm going to put this aside. I'm going to move on. My understanding is quite high. I'm aware of the weather. That's where the line is, basically. Is like
now. Let's stop there. And that goes on the watch list. I like the company. There's not a lot of reason to put a ton of time into this right here. We do what's we call a pitch deck, which is sort of like if you were to walk into my office and tell me about a company, it would be a format to do that.
Yeah.
Tell me about it, you know, in a few minutes. And by the time we get done with the watch list, we probably put in 8 to 10 hours, something like that, and have a pretty good understanding of the business, enough to say, yeah, this isn't for us, or it is for us, but the price is just way too high. So let's not spend a lot of time on this right now. Let's go see if we can find something that's more buyable.
That's a useful format, pitch decks. And for anybody who's not familiar, just Google pitch decks and like a million of them will come up and you'll see a lot of examples. And there's some that have 100 slides. They're usually in slides. And 100, some will have 100 slides and some will have 10 and some will have 5.
Yeah.
And generally, I would say it's kind of, shorter is better because the whole point is to have kind of a Cliff's Notes about a company.
And if you ever want to see some professionals going through their pitch deck, sign up for one of these hedge fund conferences. You know, it might cost you, $600 or something to go to one. A one-day conference. And what you'll see is almost all day long, they'll be in there looking at, you'll probably have 5 super professional hedge fund managers who are billionaires or multi-millionaires from successful investing going through their pitch deck on a company.
That's a great idea.
David Einhorns are famous for doing these great pitch decks. You get an idea of what it looks like. You're talking about something that would take, 10 to 20 minutes to go through.
Yeah,
Half an hour maybe.
The idea is like imagine pitching investors and the idea is you don't want the investors to get bored. So you try to keep it on the shorter side. So let's pause here and then Go talk about the next one next time. Go ahead.
We're so close to being done with this, aren't we?
Yeah, that's why we'll talk about it next time.
Okay, but we got to go through the priority list, which we sort of started, and we have to go. There's a little bit left. All right, we'll talk about it next time.
priority list. Man. That's new. This is why we do series because there's a lot to talk about. It's not because we're bored with it. It's because we want to talk about it.
I love this thing.
What did you just say? Priority list? Priority list.
Yeah. Like a priority list.
Like a priority list?
Yeah.
Wait, a priority list though. Like a priority list?
Yeah, where do we put our time?
Like how you prioritize. Like a list of priorities?
Yes. Are you all right? Oh, my God. Messing with your daddy.
Because you said priority list. Like a priority list. It's too much. Okay.
I don't know why she's... Okay. Enough of this.
Until next time.
Time to go play.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important. It's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only. And I really hope you enjoyed it.